The Mandalay should be present that day. Madhusudan Subhadra Gunatai Gadakars, who were called on 21st March, including Rhoda Irani, Subramanyam, Soman, Shinde, Kamle, Dagle, Pote, Nidhukar. All those who were there on 21st March were called again. Ramakrishna, Marwan, and then on 4th April 1960, that Shinde, Kamle, Davle, and Pote were told today by Baba personally, when they were here with him this afternoon, that Sadashiv Patel will be always at Guru Prasad from 2 to 5 daily. Adi is coming to Guru Prasad on 9th morning, April, at 8 a.m. for Baba's work and to be present for the program. The Nagar Bhajan Mandalay is also permitted to come for the program from 2 to 6 p.m. That's on the 9th of April. Baba is writing in March, Erich is writing 13th March, that Baba, to Ramakrishna, Baba wants to know that he will not feel happy to find people waiting to see him on roadside on 20th March when he arrives. He does not wish to see anyone on the roadside. None should come to Guru Prasad on 20th or the next day unless called. But Baba wants Ramakrishna to come on Sunday 27th and following Sundays and holidays as usual. On 6th March 1960, I think Baba is going to Ahmednagar for some program. This is 4th March 1960. Jal Irani came to Marzad on 27th. He left for Pune the next day for some work to explain to him. Maharani Shata Devi will be with Baba on 6th March on the Darshan day. Baba's birthday message, when one remains fully and completely resigned to the divine will of God, all service, sacrifice, solitude, seeking and surrenderance, merely symbolizes one love for God. That's for 1960, and that was given on the 20th February 1960. When one remains fully and completely resigned to the divine will of God, all service, sacrifice, solitude, seeking, and surrenderance merely symbolize one's love for God. It was given as Dear Sarabji Sigampuri asked for a message for the Bombay function on the 25th. Balnatu arriving Marzad, 3rd March. Thursday by the morning bus. Balnath was also in Marzad 17th January 1960. Balnath was also there 31st December 59 and 30th December. Dalit Singh, he died on 23rd December 1959. And Baba cabled his son, Upkar Singh at Jabalpur, such a brave, loving soul as dear Dalit Singh cannot but come to me, his only beloved.
Recordings made on December 17th. Mandalay Hall, Marzad, December 31st, 1983.
Go out from Mandalay Hall. This is Mandalay Hall.
Now, something we were talking about at breakfast this morning brought to mind a memory, and I find myself chuckling and laughing over it, so maybe I can share it. And that is how Baba's gestures are not only eloquent, but they're so much stronger than lip reading. You know, you can lip read a person at a distance, even if that person cannot talk. So when Baba did not talk, you could see his gestures way at a distance. Now I'm a bit surprised when I look back and recall some of those moments. How come it was so easy to understand him? Way down, somewhere where he was sitting, and we would be standing here, even looking over the head of Baba Lala. And Baba would make a little gesture, and it was stronger than any spoken word. It was clearer and louder than if he was standing close to a person and hearing him talk. Again and again, we've experienced that. Now, I'll tell you a funny incident that happened. This time, we were in Kashmir with Baba. And I don't remember the details, but all I know is that we were going through the town, the busy, active town, in two tongas. Now, tonga is a horse carriage. You must have seen it. It's very useful, not very comfortable. You know, you go up and down a lot. You sway a lot in the tonga when sitting at the back. But in one tonga was Baba and Mara at the back, and somebody in front with the driver. Now, he didn't want Meru or me next to the driver, so Meru and I were in another tonga. I think Rana was in Baba's tonga, and somebody was in ours. But even while we're sightseeing, as it were, all our attention, all our focus would be on Baba. So even though we were, riding in a tonga, we were turning our heads around, looking at Baba's tonga, because Baba's tonga was first, then ours followed. Now, what happened was that the horse of Baba's tonga was obviously more alert and brighter and quicker, and tup, 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 it went. And ours was a laggard. It was lagging behind. And we kept looking at Baba, turning our heads around to see him. And we found his tonga receding further and further. And it had gone quite a distance, and Baba is gesturing, telling us with a frown, a sharp frown, "What's the matter with you? What are you so far away for? Come on, hurry up. You know, no time." And we saying, I just chit back, "What to do? The horse. It's the horse." But, I mean, whether that carried or not, but that's what I did. And then, this was, the situation was getting desperate. And Meru had a brainwave. She couldn't talk to the man, to the driver of the tonga, but she said to nobody in particular, grumbling, and in his language, "What sort of a horse is this? It's no good. Why, what's he having a tonga for? Look at that other tonga, past us and way ahead of us and all." And while she went on doing this, suddenly, with a jerk, we found that our tonga had picked up. The driver had only taken the whip and put it in its metal holder and made a strange sound, da 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 da, and then extraordinary clucking sounds like a cord between him and the horse, and suddenly that horse picked up speed with a jerk and was going on full tilt. And we were hanging on to the tonga to see. Now, so we were getting nearer to Baba. Now, what happened while that horse had this sudden exercise of going forward with a spurt like that, he started breaking wind. Now, that's usually a source of amusement in our household, especially to Meru. And it was very rhythmic, but very loud. It was like a trombone playing boop, boop, boop. And Meru was convulsed with laughter, but hanging on to the tonga, even while she was doubling up, because we both had fallen out. And while we were doing this, we passed Baba's tonga. We were so fast that as we passed, Baba's frown was even greater and sharper, and she says, "Meru laughing like anything." And I caught on too, and he said, "What is this?" Baba's saying, "What is this? This is, you passing my tonga?" And again, you see, it's not us, it's the horse. It's the horse. Now, it's no good Meru saying, "Slow down," because once, you know, his ego had been touched. We just passed Baba's tonga, gallop, 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 and Baba looking not at all pleased, and we trying not to laugh. But his gesture, what he was conveying, was so clear, even from way in the distance, what Baba was meaning to say. And then, of course, we were walking that evening on the street, and Baba said, "You must buy a present. You must buy a present." Now, that again is not a joke, it's not an easy thing, because usually it doesn't happen, and then we say, "Present." But what present? We were racking our brains. And suddenly, Mary was thinking, and I was thinking, and Mary thought of frames, wooden frames, for putting Baba's pictures in it. Because they make beautiful carvings in walnut, and up there in Kashmir. And they make frames and boxes and things. But now, which shop? None of us knew about any shops or shopping or anything. And then we were walking with Baba on the street. So many passing him, so many seeing him without knowing. And that always used to fascinate me. Here Baba is walking unknown among these people who are being blessed by his very presence, but not conscious. So suddenly it was Baba who chose the shop for us to go in. And why, if you please? Because looking up, we saw that the board, the name of the shop on this huge board outside said, Suffering Moses. And that tickled Baba. He gave such a chuckle. He said, here's where we will go for shopping. So we went in there for shopping. And we got a lot of those wooden frames and things. And then we came out.
The shop is still there.
Yeah. Is it still there, Suffering
last
Moses?
Last year we heard it from somebody who had something that it's still there, Suffering Moses.
Yeah. It's delightful. We saw Baba dressed up as Moses. You know that? No? We were in Cannes, and we were playing charades. We used to play charades with Baba. So there would be sort of two parties, two teams, and the fun of the charades was more in the dressing up than in trying to find out the word. Of course, Baba would always find out the word, no matter how complicated we made it and tried to cover it up with so many other things. But this time, it was Baba playing, and Norina was on his side. This much I remember. There were others too, probably Rana and some of the others. But Baba came from through the door, and looking so jaunty and so merry, and what he had on was a long beard, which Norina made out of a beautiful black Italian lace that she had. She draped it round like that, so Baba was the long beard. And so Baba was Moses. And Baba sort of looked at us. How do I look, huh? Huh? See? And the hairiest Moses we've ever seen. But Baba's gesture for Moses was also like that, in a long beard, like that. And he would always be tickled by that somehow. Once, I remember, there was a boy named Moses. There was a Jewish family who got very drawn to Baba in Pune through my twin nephews. Somehow they knew them at work or whatever it was. And they used to go to Baba's house, and they saw Baba at Guru Prasad once. And so one day at the correspondence reading time, when Erich was reading out correspondence to Baba in the Mandiri Hall, Erich read out a letter which was addressed to Baba saying that he tried his best. This is one of the boys had written, one of those boys. He tried his best to find a job, but he can't find, he's worn out his souls, but he's trying to, but he cannot find a job, you know. So, and Baba heard it, said, who's it? So one of the boys that Rustam Saurabh would come and they saw you. He didn't seem very much interested. And he said, what's his name? And Beres read out, Moses. Moses, said Baba. That completely changed the whole thing. Baba looked, you know, with that beaming smile, and he was so amused and chuckling. He said, granted, you know, sort of given. 2 days later came a letter, he found a wonderful job. But because his name was Moses, and it tickled Baba,
people would approach Baba for jobs and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Then another thing that happened, but that was later, after Baba dropped his body. But there again, it reminded us of all the Moses incidents. And that was Diana Wadelick from Australia, who had come. But she left her month-old or two-month-old baby back in Australia and came for Baba's, for Darshan here. This was after 69. And, but then she had a lot of milk as a mother. And she had to have a baby suckle her breast. And so Goharap caught this doctor, and then before you knew it, we were a whole team, all trying to find a baby for Diana to nurse. And babies could be found, because it was not as easy as you think. When we got a villager's baby, the baby was hungry enough, but when she looked at Diana's face, fair face, let out a bawl and wouldn't drink anymore. So Goharap used to put a towel over Diana's head. So while she nursed the baby, if the baby looked up, she couldn't see her face. But many things happened. They even tried a baby of the road workers. There were a gang of road workers, and they were digging up the road and all. And Goharap thought, here's this woman who has a baby. So she asked, could you please, this man needs a baby to give milk to only for a while. She said yes, and when Diana took it, as soon as she prepared to nurse the baby, the mother-in-law came and snatched the baby away and said, what do you mean? This is something hokey-pokey. They couldn't understand why should that be. And the moment, every time somebody did that, Diana would burst like a fountain into tears. And we said, don't cry, Diana, we'll try again. So then, Goher went to Booth Hospital, Salvation Army Hospital in Ahmednagar, and the matron is a very friendly, nice person. And they have these foundlings, these little babies that they did. So they got one. But the poor dear had never known a mother's milk and didn't know how to suckle and was too weak. So didn't have the strength to. And what do you think his name was, that little one?
Moses.
So when Goher came and told us again, we said, not Moses again. But we managed in the end.
Mommy, I have a question about Father's chest. Good.
Yes?
We noticed in the film last night, there was a film of Father, group with Father with his cat running around. In that film and in another one that I've seen of Father, he's moving his mouth. It almost looks like he's speaking. What is happening?
No, he would, it must have been a very late period. Time and it's as if Baba was sucking something.
Little cardamom powder.
Yeah. Is it or varyali?
Yeah. He would be given, powdered cardamom seeds, for his mouth. He'd like to have a little something in his mouth.
Varyali is aniseed?
Aniseeds are there, powdered there. Or sometimes it will be popcorn he might have put in his mouth and maybe. So that's how he is mouth moving about.
Well, if he was talking, did he lip read? I'd like to know what he said.
Well, it was more like he was kind of pulling his lips in.
When he's eating popcorn, I thought I was tricking him. For the sake of love, of course. Because when I went into the little Mandali hall where Baba was seated with my camera, again Baba made a face at me and said, there she is again. And I said, but I'm not taking a film, Baba. I'm only trying, there's no film in it. This is a blank camera. I'm only trying out the light. And I spoke the truth, because then I turned around, quickly stepped out, picked the cartridge in and came back. And I thought, Baba still thinks that I have no film, and therefore he's being so natural, he's not saying anything. But I got a jolt when after a while Baba said, how much film are you going to take down? Usually when you see Baba doing this in some film, it's at me saying, bye, quite enough.
No, why is popping in popcorn?
No, that's another. Like when he's eating ice cream, I got that.
Guru Prasad, small hall.
Oh, I love that.
It's a nice shop.
It's a film.
Very nice film.
Because he didn't eat he liked the salt taste on it. But the rest of it he would discard. And I thought, Baba thinks I have no film, I'm only just doing it. Back.
Money,
sister
Baba, ever play
cards
with women?
Yes. But then we were very few at the time. Like when we were in Simla, for instance, one instance I remember very well. Not when we were many, but afterwards when Baba came to Mehrazad, maybe a little sand, just took a few of the women with him wherever he was going. So we were in Simla, just Mehra, Mehru, Baba and I were playing. Kitty was with us. Rana was with us in Kashmir. Kitty was with us in Simla. And we were playing this game, and the losers win a donkey coat. You know, you're supposed if the party that loses gets a donkey coat, in just figuratively, but it's not a nice thing to get, you know. So Baba and I were one side, and Mehra were on the other side. And Baba lost, and I always teased him. I said, "You lost because you know Mehra was. You wanted Mehra to win. She was on the opposite team." So Baba and I lost, and they still tease me. This Mehru still teases me. Ah, if you're feeling so cold, put on that donkey coat of yours. But an interesting thing happened in Simla. We went to see a play. A little affair, nothing like what you have in the West, because it's a small place, a resort at that time. The season was for that. But it was very nicely done. It was an English group that put up this play. And so Kitty took us, women. Baba said, you know, take them out, these little outings things. So we went and saw the play. Now, I was very much attracted to this beautiful vase that was pearl white. And it glowed. There was some elegance, some beauty about it that struck me. So when I came home, I said, ah, what a vase that was. You call it vase, right? What a beautiful vase in that play. I'll never forget it. And Mara said, what do you mean white vase? It was green, jade. I said, I'm sorry, Mara, it was white. Well, you can be sorry, but I know it was green. Well, I said, I'm absolutely sure it was white. She said, I'm positive it was green. And I said, I mean, if you want me to say yes, I can say yes, but you can tell me. You can tell me all night it was green, and I still know it was white. She said, you can tell me all night and all day it was white, but I know it's green. So we couldn't come to a point. And what do you think Kitty did? She traipsed it in the daytime off to the theater, which was some distance, and she went and asked whether the vase that was in one of the scenes, and some of the scenes, was it white or was it green? And the lady was so delighted and surprised. She said, you know, I didn't think anybody would be interested in the vase, but they meant a lot to us. And we couldn't decide whether to put the green or the white. So for some of the scenes, we kept green.
Monty, this is really Jill's question, but could you talk about Baba's his favorite Western music and maybe instances like the first time he heard those songs, the Jim Reeves songs or Begin the Begin, you know, the ones that were really his favorites and any stories associated with those?
Well, I don't know about stories, but I know when Narina, Elizabeth, Nani, Kitty, and Margaret, and all the Westerners were here, there were a lot of the, also Baba, when he would visit the West, when we were very cloistered here during his absence, he would bring back records and things. In those days, Paul Robeson's Negro Spirituals, Baba was very fond of them, and again we played them. And of course, Narina and Elizabeth had the classical music thing. He would listen to them sometimes, but his favorite was this Negro spiritual, Spanish music, Hungarian rhapsodies, and some singing which is more for the voice. Who was that singer?
Jim Reeves.
Rana? Maria? Mara. Some pianos.
Imperial Ima Suma. Ima Suma.
No. That was very late. No. You see, we have even forgotten. Mm-hmm. But there were different records we had, and then Isle of Capri. But then, had somebody else been singing it, it may not have been the same. Somehow the voice would touch Baba or not touch Baba. I mean, a particular song by Bing Crosby lullaby, Baba would like it very much. But that doesn't mean Bing Crosby singing any song would catch it.
Mm-hmm.
So according to the his pleasure for the sound, for the voice, he said Jim Reeves' voice in English singing touched his heart, just as Begum Akhtar's voice in Indian singing touched his heart. So when we used to play Jim Reeves' records, when his favorites were played, he often had the finger on his heart as he swayed, listening to the sound. He wanted us to get all the records possible. And in 1968, when he had that very strenuous walking that he did in Guru Prasad, he said this was his relaxation. That had to be. So even while he was eating. But it would always begin with the first record to be put on. I would put on There's a Heartache Following Me. Then the others would be played in between, and ending again with There's a Heartache Following Me, like his signature tune, Tribe. So, you see, always the men's wing was totally different from the women's. And there was in between what we call the Rani's Room and the small Mandali's Hall. But there's transoms, I mean, beautiful glass doors and things, and there were those transoms with Guru Prasad within the glass. It's as if it's part of the glass. It's very beautifully done. So the dining table was here. So when we would play the begin, it would go through the transom direct to what was known as Erich's office, which was nothing but part of the veranda. There was a sofa here and a cupboard here, so that little niche was his. So when he would hear that, and then the rest while he was working there, but at the end, when we would play again, There's a Heartache Following Me, we could hear Erich calling out to the rest of the men mandali, Baba's coming. That meant Baba's coming over to the men's side. It meant the session of the music on the women's side is over. And when I played, I think that was about the last day before our packing. Any other? And we had gotten what we could. So there was this welcome to my world.
Mm-hmm.
Baba said, very good. Mara, listen. Play it again. You see, he would take any natural excuse, create a natural excuse, which would seem very natural that he wants it played twice, that he wants it done. He wanted to hear it a second time. So he says, Mara, you haven't heard this properly. See, play it again. So I played that again. And then he said, bring it over to the men's side. So when the wide, tall doors would be opened and Baba would step in from the women's side into the Mandali's hall, the little hall, and then the doors would be shut and then the men would come to be with Baba. So Baba said, you bring it along. So often I would find when Baba did that, then here was Baba walking with his hands on Mara's arm, going beside him, or rather ahead of him, to see to the door and all, walking from the dining table all that distance to that door, and I walking behind him with this portable gramophone with a record playing on it. And once it was that Heartache Following Me. And somehow, anyway. So Baba said, bring over that welcome to my world. Bring it. The men must listen. Very nice. So then Baba sat in the chair in the Mandali Hall. That little portable gramophone was put by his feet, and I sat down by his feet. And then the few men Mandali that were there at the time, because none could come in and none could go out, it was that period, they were sitting around. And Baba said, play it. And that is a moment I recall as Baba looking very big. And there Baba sat, you know, just gentle, and said, play. So then, as I played it, it was as if Francis was too obtuse to understand. So that is the excuse he made. And he said, listen, Francis, listen. And so it was as if in order to help the Mandali understand, he was doing the gestures, the pantomime. But he did it through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Knock and the door will open. Seek and you will find. Ask and you'll be given the key to this world of mine. And then in the end, when I'll be waiting here with my arms unfurled, he left it like that while he's singing twice. And then he had me play it again. And that, I think, was the last big play that Gretchen wrote. So there was that. And Begumakhtar, imagine, when you, we have known for years how Baba liked Begumakhtar's voice and what ghazals she sang. It was heartrending. And then to find that she loves Baba, that she becomes a Baba lover, and she comes right here in this hall while Baba's seated here, she sits there and sings for him, sings to him. She had even composed a song for him. And as she was singing, the tears were going down her cheeks. And Baba took a kerchief from the table next to him and gave tears to give it to her to wipe her tears. And then he said she can keep it. And there was one song which has stuck in my memory more than others, is this ghazal written long ago by some poet, Jigar or Ghalib or somebody, because Baba liked those as favorites, among his favorites. And this song was a plaint from the lover to the beloved. Very often these ghazals are like that. Now this is a lament. The lover says, but now, who is going to heed my plaint? Who is going to listen to me? Who's going to look after me? Who's, and all this in the vein. And each time when she says, who is going to listen to me? Baba says, it's such an expression. I listen. Who will see? I'll see. Who will do it? And here was Baba, like the beloved, was answering the lover right then. But later, it assumed a deeper meaning. That this is what Baba was getting on. That even when we thought, now who can we complain to? I often say that. Who are we to complain to now? And, you know, but then Baba said, me, I'll see to it. I'll listen. I'll hear. So many ways that he has given that message. I am here. I am seeing to it. But it's different. And he says, listen. The expression on his face would make the whole difference. Did you hear? Did you hear such and such yet? Listen. Or even obey means listen. Listen to me means obey me. What I say, listen. Oh, he told us in many ways that we didn't recognize. And even when we would give a little deeper thought to it, he somehow veiled it with other things. So at the same time we've received it, with one hand he would tell us what to be, and another hand he would put it over our eyes, so that we were totally unaware when it happened. And on that day, while we were in the room, and before we had gone with him to Mehrabad on 31st January, I suddenly remembered an incident that had happened at least 30 years ago. And it just came and stood before me. And that incident was that when we were in Dehradun, and we were used to Baba giving us surprises, he would come suddenly with his hands in his pockets, those lovely pockets. I mean, that's such a familiar part of Baba, the pockets of his coat. And he would bring out a little baby squirrel, chipmunk, or little baby birds he'd draw. Oh, you know, something, some birds, babies that had fallen out of a nest. And he'd pick them up on the way. And of course, we'd have to take care of it, but he'd bring it and he'd give the surprises. So we were used to that, you know, Baba bringing in a little surprise or giving a little surprise or say, you know what, today I plan, we're going to Ajinkyatara tomorrow or something. So this day, when he sat before us, and there were quite a number of women then, quite a number, we were all seated before him, and Baba said, he said, all right, everybody, close your eyes. Tight, no peeking, that's my order. And count 30. He told me to count it. And when 30 is finished, open your eyes. Ah, we were so delighted, what now? And then he said, not fast, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, no. Go on. So I said, 1, 2, 3, 4. Right. That's the range. So we got, as we were getting to 20, 25, 30, but not peaking. That was his order. And then when we opened our eyes in anticipation and joy, what was the surprise? She had walked out. No bother. Oh, he cheated us. We couldn't believe it. We were laughing and groaning and complaining, and all of us rushed out looking for Baba. That incident came to my mind in Baba's room on 31st January. Another trick, Baba. Yeah. But also something else he did in Dehradun at that same period I'm talking about, 30 years ago. From that time, it was in the 1940s. It took me as in his plot, as it were, because he had learned a trick from Dr. Donkin. Dr. Donkin had showed him a trick. That's what he told me. So he was now going to show it to me because he needed my help, and this is to have some fun with the rest. So everybody was gathered there. But before that, he had me practice with him. He said, now, they will write on a little slip of paper, anyone, and they will hand it to me, that means to Baba. And Baba would read it, but you will answer the question without reading it. And he said, if I do this, you ought to say that, and if I do this, the second finger, if I raise my second finger, you have to do that. If I move my little finger, you have to say that. And if I fiddle with my tongue, you have to say that. So I had to memorize all that. Okay, ready. So Baba told him, all seated before, he said, you know what I've done today? A real surprise. They all looked. He said, I've given money all the powers. She can read your mind. She knows your thoughts. Some of them were looking rather bewildered. And Eris's mother told me later, she was so pleased. She said, at least money got it. So Baba told someone, all right, write down whatever it is. Just a short question, only a question, and give it to me. See, money's standing there, I'm here. And Baba would read it, and then, as if he's thinking, he would do this. And I replied. And they were stunned. They couldn't believe it. So the whole thing went very, very cleverly. And in fact, afterwards, when Baba was trying to tell them that, you know, I don't know whether he told them or not, but they really believed it till the end. I don't know how the joke was exposed. I don't remember that. But years later, after Baba dropped his body, when I recalled this incident, I said, wait a minute. Baba already told me the answers before the questions were given to him. I never thought of that. I thought I was so clever that I learned it by heart. But he slipped.
Monty, you remember any of the questions?
No. You see, this I remember the strongest part of it because it was such fun. But the details I don't remember. Wishing for powers, or longing for powers, we might have been disappointed or something, but it was a huge joke. Baba never gave importance of that to us. And where was the room for it?
Mm-hmm.
Baba is so much. There's no niche or for even a needle of a thought like that to get in. What does it matter to us? When we have Baba, what is powers? What is place? What is this? It was a tiresome thing to even have to read or to, when he was explaining to some people who were just visiting, and then Baba would do the board, and for us to read out at that time, or even about Baba's silence, it used to be very tiresome for us, even in the family letters for me to write it. It meant nothing to us.
Would you say you were even happier knowing Baba as you did, like you... There was no thought of even wanting to see Baba in his real form, that you were happy just serving him?
Certainly.
As
not even happy. That's all we wanted, and that's all we got.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we still want. Maybe that's all we'll get again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I cannot convey, I or any of us who were within, that there is nothing beyond that to want. As far as we are concerned, there is nothing. And that doesn't mean that because you didn't see Baba in his true form, that his godhood, his godness, as I call it, didn't come through. It came through every act, every human act of Baba. I tell you, one received more through his humanness, his godness, than through anything else, or any so-called experience or reading. That was the most difficult part for him, to keep hiding his divineness, to see that that doesn't slip through. And just the few, that little peep that he gave to a very few, as I say, like a king, like the emperor, disguised as a peasant going among his people at night. But some he'd tap on the shoulder and say, "Don't tell anybody, but it's me." And that's what's happening to you all, too.
Mm-hmm.
But there are how many there are? Mm-hmm. It was not through, not known. But these little whispers in the heart of certain ones, that's the beauty of it. But, as I said before, too, that the garment that he was trying always to veil his divinity, to hide it from all. Sometimes there'd be a tear in it because his body was the garment. And for his work, he gave his body for his work. He broke it in the accident. What he didn't do to himself, the fast. And at those times, we have seen groups, multitudes receive of his divinity. It, at those times, it is as if there had been a little rent in that garment, a tear, and through that you glimpse his godness, his divinity. We have seen that again and again. Like the time in New York when he gave darshan in 1952, after that, his whole leg in a cast. A broken man, as it were, and the impact on all who came for his darshan. They were weeping with love. They didn't want to leave. They received that, which he gave it through that. And we would say, "Oh, look, when Baba was walking about so fast and speedily, and he looked so beautiful with flowing hair and so active, like quicksilver going among us. Nobody was there to take pictures and films of him then. What is the good of doing it now?" But it is not so. It is even through this that he gives of himself more. It's amazing to us because we watched both. As I say, that time when those missionaries in Sitara were shocked that anybody could call himself God, that we could say such a person is God, when Jesus Christ, the only begotten Son of God, is accepted. And he's a Christian. Dr. Johnson was an Englishman, a Christian. And Dr. Gauri Rani, such a lovely person. How could they be befogged? How could they get into this fog and believe what is a myth? So they pray for us. They pray for Dr. Rani. They pray for Dr. Johnson. And lots of things happened. But I tell you, at the time of the accident, when Baba had that accident in Sitara, it was like for us, a life in Sitara had received an explosion. We just shot out of our life. It was like a bolt out of the blue. And we were exploded out of Sitara. We've never gone back. We even left our things behind. Rano and Naja had later to bring the things. But at that time, those missionaries that could not bear this heresy, blasphemy, they were standing at the corner to see Baba's car go around. And here was Baba in it, a broken person, according to the worldly point of view. And they were standing there, and the men had hats down, and the others bowing. With such reverence, acknowledged, in that moment, they got a revelation of who he is, as it were, a glimpse, at least for that moment. And to see that touched us so much, that we our car was following, you see. And here, they were standing with such reverence, such love. And we said, "Now?" And though they could have come, they could have seen Baba, they could have received. But that time, no. And they were crying. And now, and with his broken body, and anything but looking like one who can stand up and say, I'm God. And here they have received that revelation.